Good morning. Welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Bonnie Rose. It's great to see you here in person and also online. Welcome to our Kindness Cathedral and welcome to our Temple for Transformation. I'm going to go ahead and pass the word to Lonnie.
Good morning. Oh, what a beautiful fall day this is. And oh, so many blessings seeing everybody joining us this morning and out in our live streaming. I just know it's this really extra special day when we got Gia in the house. Rocking us and Chris. So settle in. I know that we are a blessing and the blessing will just multiply in miraculous ways. So have fun.
Thank you, Lonnie. We're going to hear from our Director of Youth and Family right now, Susie Thatcher. Here she comes. Let's hear it for Susie.
Thank you. My legs are short, but my heart is large. All right. What is our purpose? That's what I'm asking you today. I brought a toolbox activity so that we could talk about that and think about that. Are we here to love and experience? Are we here to serve others? Do we have a mission to accomplish or a soul lesson to learn? Are we here to contribute or receive? We do have a choice as to what we believe and what our purpose is. We always have a choice. A good friend of mine told me that her purpose was to be the best version of herself that she could possibly be. So I brought some tools today to just demonstrate for you what you could use toward building the best version of yourself. And you could add those to your toolbox. I'll start with a hammer. Be the best that you can be. Mm-hmm. A wrench. Find your passion. A screwdriver. Serve and be useful. And finally, look for whatever calls to you. See what you can add to your toolbox and take those tools to build and shape and change and adapt and use those tools to create love. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. From COVID, we forget certain things. That was always the exit song for the kids. And every day we encounter something that we used to do, and then we forget to do it now. We're like, wait, oh, we forgot to, I don't know, put out snacks, or we forgot to put out name tags or whatever. But anyway, we're all using our toolboxes to reinvent ourselves, and now let's use the tool of prayer. And I'll call our practitioner forward, Victoria, and she will lead us in prayer.
Good morning. Standing with me, the beautiful lights of practitioners and ministers. Standing here, I feel deep, inspired gratitude as I feast through my eyes before I close them. Beautiful, beautiful lights that are the practitioners and ministers and congregation of this beautiful center of love. So very blessed and grateful we all are to be here together today. And so I know that we are the light of God, and that everywhere we are a prism of this love and radiance. We are here to share the truth that all is good, all is well, and all is a reason to be grateful and joyful. This beautiful earth is filled with so many wonderful expressions of this divine expression of love. And so I know that today's service, I allow the truth that the more I open to being tolerant, to being free, to letting love just be everywhere in everyone, that I know that I open to the divine inspiration that is the word of this service. I am so grateful for Reverend Bonnie Rose as she channels and allows this divine light to flow through her as her. I am so very grateful for everyone that is a part of this center, for they and I and each of us are a part of the most important tool, and that is love, that is our hearts, that is the allowing of the radiance of spirit to always come forth through us. And so for that, again, I am so very grateful, so very humbled and inspired to be with the congregation, the whole entire family of this church, knowing today is perfect, whole, and complete in every divine expression through the music, the poetry, and all of the acts of love. I say yes, surrender, and allow the truth to be. And I release this prayer into God's love. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.
Thank you. So let us stay in that beautiful place, that place of loving kindness, humility, grace, whatever it is we choose to call it. It goes by many names. And let us breathe into that awareness as we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
The Holy Water by Rabia al-Basri. No one lives outside the walls of this sacred place. Existence. The holy water, I need it upon my eyes. It is you, dear, you, each form. What mother would lose her infant? And we are that to God. Never lost from its gaze are we. Every cry of the heart is attended by light's own arms. You cannot wander anywhere that will not aid you. Anything you can touch, God brought it into the classroom of your mind. Differences exist, but not in the city of love. Thus my vows and yours, I know they are the same. I have just peeled the skin from the potato, and you are still contemplating its worth. Sweetheart, indeed there are wonderful nutrients in all, for God made everything. My soul's face has revealed its beauty to me. Why was it shy for so long? Didn't it know how this made me suffer and weep? A different game love plays with its close ones. God tells us truths you would not believe. For most everyone needs to limit love's compassion. Concepts of right and wrong preserve the golden seed until one of God's friends comes along and tends your body like a divine bride. The The Holy sent out a survivor to find the limits of its compassion and being. God knows a divine frustration whenever it acts like that, for the infinite has no walls. Why not tease God about this? Why not accept the freedom of what it means for our God to see us as itself? No one lives outside the walls of this sacred place, existence.
And so, recognizing the divine presence in everything, in everyone, and everything, in this sacred place we call existence, let us sing together, "I am remembering who I am." Knowing that I am is another name for God, or love, or peace, or happiness, the divine, the higher power. We sing this song together to remember our true nature and to remember on behalf of all beings everywhere. I am remembering who I am, wearing our masks in joy and peace. In this precious stillness that always remembers, let us breathe in deeply and then exhale, opening our eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is.
He's closer than your hands and feet, is in everyone you meet, holy, perfect, and complete. My indwelling spirit is the sweet, still voice inside, sees me with a loving eye, dries up every tear I cry. I am knowing, knowing, knowing. I am knowing, knowing, knowing. My eternal self is a sweet still voice inside, sees me with a loving eye, dries up every tear I cry. Your indwelling spirit is a mystery to behold, always ageless, never old, wiser than you'll ever know. I am knowing.
Thanks so much, you guys. That sounded great. Yeah. I had a little wardrobe malfunction. Need to go back there and fix my microphone. But and how fun to have David back, David. We're loving on you. Yeah. and Chris, of course, who rudely was missing in action last Sunday because he had a rehearsal. But Chris is back working too. So just good stuff. Okay, so today I'm talking about a topic called Sacred Imperfection. And one of the reasons that I'm talking about this is because I'm currently doing a 21-day interfaith challenge with a global service organization called Service Space. Many of you folks that attend here regularly know that I and many of us are deeply involved with this organization. So we're doing a 21-day interfaith challenge, as I mentioned. And I've noticed that in doing this challenge, that one of the words that came up that tested people's assumptions and their consciousness was the word perfection. That there were people that had trouble with the word perfection. And I'm talking like seriously global, like 54 countries, people from all over the world. You know, I had always heard there's this lore going around, and it might be true, but I don't know if it's still true, that the struggle with esteem, self-esteem, and feeling like we're not enough and feeling like we're not doing enough, that was largely an American problem or a problem of the West. There are stories about how when the Dalai Lama was asked a question about self-esteem, he was like, or low self-esteem, he was like, what is that? I don't understand that term. But in my experience recently, it seems that it is a global problem, that there are people that struggle with the word perfection because it feels like it shines a light on their imperfection. And it shines a light on something that they might call perfectionism, or not being enough, or feeling inadequate, or not doing enough. And so I felt like perhaps in this fairly homogeneous American congregation that we have here, that perhaps one or two of us may have struggled with the idea of imperfection or perfectionism. And I was hoping that I could be of service today to that, not only in everybody sitting there and online, but also of service to myself, because I'm still working with that as well. So my very favorite story about perfectionism and the way the mind works around it is this. I went to high school in the suburbs of Manhattan, and very strong arts focus where I went to school. One of my friends grew up to be a concert pianist, very talented. She went to Juilliard. And after I had already left New York, she did a really important concert. I don't know exactly what that means, but I'm assuming it was in a prestigious hall. Let's say it was something like Carnegie Hall, because I know she played there. I'm not sure if this concert actually took place there, but let's just call it Carnegie Hall. And she was playing a very well-known piece, very prominent piece. I wasn't there for the concert because I'd already moved to California. But when I visited her in New York, I said to her, "So, how did that concert go?" And I remember it so well. We were standing on the corner of 79th and Broadway, heading across the street to go to a diner to totally pork out on breakfast food. And she said, "Bonnie, I played a wrong note." It was in a part that everybody knows, a part that's singable, and my hand was sweaty, and they slipped off the keys, and I played a wrong note, and everybody heard it. I said, "Are you playing the wrong note now? Because you're still feeling the pain, aren't you?" But no, we went on and we had our breakfast and we talked about other things, but I felt that so deeply, because how many of us, you know, if you're having a day when you're feeling like a failure, when you're feeling like there's something going wrong with you, when there feels like there's something maybe going wrong with your microphone, I don't know. you know, that becomes our focal point. That's all we can think about. That becomes the defining moment in our lives. I ask with you for a moment to consider with me the humble pie chart. Remember pie charts, right? From I think I learned about them in elementary school geometry, right, Vicki? Is that when they learn about it? Okay, second grade maybe? Okay, whatever. She's a second grade teacher. So, you know, let's pretend that Beethoven had been in that concert. Let's pretend it was a Beethoven piece, and Beethoven was in that concert. And let's also pretend that Beethoven could hear, because, you know, he was deaf, so I could have picked a different composer. But if we looked at the number of notes that played according to Beethoven's intention, it would be 99.9%. It would be, the whole pie would be, say, green. But if we looked at the wrong note, it would be like 0.1%, right? One little teeny sliver of, say, blue, right? So that's the reality. Notes intended to Beethoven, attributed to Beethoven, that he intended are here. The wrong note, here, right? Now let's look at my friend's mind and how much attention she is paying to things. Attention spent on the wrong note. Here. Attention spent on the right note. Little tiny sliver, right? Does that sound familiar to anybody? Please, do tell. Let me sit down and come on up here. If this was a class, boy, we'd be hearing some good stories. I want to make church more like class so we can all learn from each other. We can all be humiliated in front of each other, right? About all of our things that are going on. Ugh, I'm really having an issue with this today. I'm sorry. I can't explain what's going on. It's too personal. I have my mic pack in a strange place because I didn't want to ruin the line of my dress. You like how I couldn't explain that because it's too personal. So okay, this will become the talk. Remember the talk when Reverend Bonnie's mic pack was in the wrong place and the mic kept clicking? I just don't want you to blame Kenny. It's not his fault. He advised me against it. But anyway, okay. Where was I? Okay. Okay, the thing about this story about my friend the pianist, too, is that it was a performance, right? And you may say to yourself, well, I'm not a performer. You know, I don't get on stage. I don't do things. But when I really looked at this, it seems that we're all performing all of the time. We're all performing for something. We might be performing for our families, trying to jockey for position in our families. We might be performing for our colleagues, our co-workers, our bosses, our employees, so they think certain things about us. We might be performing for our parents, for our internalized parents, for our friends, for someone that we want to impress. We might be performing for, let's say, I don't know, how about the inner critic, the inner judge? Some of us may be performing for what we might call a higher power or God or some standard of perfectionism that we feel that we need to measure up to. We're always performing for something. And the thing about performance that I've discovered in reading various things and in thinking about it and meditating on it is that performance often happens in the past, or we use it to predict the future. In terms of my friend, you know, when we were standing on the corner of 79th and Broadway getting ready to cross the street to go to a diner, and she was talking about this wrong note that was filling her mind, taking up that whole pie graph. And my question to her, I don't think I said this out loud, but my question in my heart was, are you playing that note right now? Because she wasn't. She was playing that note in the past, and she was using that note to predict what her future might be like, that people heard. And maybe the reviewer said something bad about it, and that it might affect her whole career as a pianist. And how often do we do that? How often do we take one little thing and use it to define us, one little thing that happened in the past, and use it to define both our present and our future when we're not really even in the present? I want to read you this quote by Cynthia Bourgeau. This is from a video that I watched of hers, and Her theory, and the theory of many mystical non-dualists, which is what we are here, we are tapping into the energy of mystical non-duality, but they believe that God is always available. This is very much the Science of Mind teaching. God is always available, and God, it is God's good pleasure to give us the kingdom of itself, the kingdom of heaven, meaning consciousness, meaning grace, meaning goodness, meaning love. And Cynthia Bourgeau wrote, this is kind of a cross between Cynthia Bourgeau and me, all of creation is a vast mirror in which the divine love can see itself. Get that? All of creation is a vast mirror in which the divine can see itself. The cosmos is for us. The whole cosmos, people. The cosmos is for us. The cosmos is not oppositional to our own emergence. The cosmos desires emergence. Everything is pushing toward expression. Everything is that hidden treasure that loves to be known from the Sufi tradition. But what blocks us is our fear and our clinging. And as we move beyond, we discover a surge of life rising up to meet us, rising up to carry us, rising up to express its love to us, rising up to emerge in the greater yet to be. But there is a catch. There is a catch. The only reason we miss divine emergence is because it can only unfold in the present. And the present is the place we rarely inhabit. Many of us miss life because we are living our vicarious interpretation of it, our virtual representation. We are performing in the past or the future. Okay? Y'all gotta stop doing that right now. If you stop, I'll stop. So that's how we are, folks. But do we have to be that way? I don't think so. For one thing, you know, I started this talk by saying that I took on this topic of sacred imperfection because it seemed like a lot of people all over the world were having trouble with the word perfection and equating it to perfectionism. And in this church, I think we've said it enough times, but if you're new, let's just inform one another again that the word perfection means inclusive of everything. It's another name for wholeness. That perfection is that which contains everything, all of the darkness, all of the light, all of the good, all of the bad, all of the in-between, that perfection is that. And that is the nature of existence, and that is the nature of God. No one exists outside of this place. No one lives outside of the place. No one lives beyond the walls of this place we call existence. That was close enough to the reading that Hugh did. No one lives beyond the walls of this place we call existence, and nothing lives beyond the wall of this place called existence. That's what perfection is. It is that which contains everything. But we confuse that with perfectionism because we are born with this thing, and this is perfect too, by the way. We are born with this thing called a binary nature, binary consciousness, which means that it divides into this and that and good and evil and joy and sorrow and darkness and light and all of those things. That's how we're made. That's what we do. It's not a problem unless we let it be. Let me tell you for a moment just an example of why I think the binary nature is a good thing. It is a good thing. We need it, okay? If you've ever hiked in the mountains with a dog or two, particularly a pointer, your binary nature comes in very useful, okay? So you look at your dog. You look at your dog, Sarah, who's dressed like a nun up there. Now, she's not wearing her habit in the mountains, so. Anyway, but you look at your dog, Sarah, and you see her body language, and you see that she's very alert, and she's pointing, and she's starting to bark, and she's looking up a hill. And you say, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Binary nature, right? Then you hear this rustling in the trees, and you say to yourself, is this big or small rustling? Is this a lizard or a mountain lion? Binary nature. Once again, you hear the rustling, and then you say to yourself, is it coming closer or is it going farther away? Right? Either or. And then you say, oh, you're with your friend, and your friend gets behind you, and you say, are you getting behind me? Granted, the friend that I was with, and this is what makes it really wrong, is that she's smaller than I am, and she's much more of an hors d'oeuvre than I am. I'm more the main course. She's the hors d'oeuvre, okay? But that's the binary nature. And the binary nature is helpful. It's also helpful when you're backing up, okay? When you're driving. I've shared this recently in a group that I was with, and I should probably share it to all of you, you know, because you come on Sundays, you've seen my car, it's in the driveway. Don't park too close to the back end of my car, okay? Because you might regret that, because I'm not a good backer-upper. Okay, my binary nature is askew in that. But the thing is that the binary nature is a good thing, and we cannot make ourselves wrong for having it. We cannot make ourselves wrong. Well, we can, but it behooves us to not make ourselves wrong for having a binary nature, and it behooves us to not make ourselves wrong for understanding that there is an inherent duality in existence. I'm going to read you this quote. It's by Annie Dillard, who wrote a wonderful book called Pilgrim at Tinker's Creek, or it could be Tinker at Pilgrim's Creek. I can't remember. I always get them mixed up, but I think it's Pilgrim at Tinker's Creek. And she wrote, this is about the nature of existence. She wrote, we could have planned things more mercifully, perhaps, but our plan would never get off the drawing board until we agreed to the very compromising terms that are the only ones being offered. The world has signed a pact with duality. Or impermanence. She says the devil, but I interpret that as duality or impermanence. The world had to sign this pact. It is a covenant to which everything, every hydrogen atom is bound. The terms are clear. If you want to live, you have to die. If you want to live in this existence, we have to contend with the conditions that have been given to us, which are the appearance of duality. However, part of our job as spiritual seekers, part of our job as folks that are exploring this concept of mystical duality is to recognize that the idea of duality is essential to existence, but to keep it in its proper place. So many of us get riveted in that concept of duality. It's like the pie chart, right? Oh, the world is dualistic. There's a little bit of mysticism here. No, it's the other way around. It's more like it's a gigantic circle of wholeness. And yes, there is this dual nature, but we transcend it. We do the work to transcend it. And the dual nature is actually part. It's not like dual and non-dual are opposites. Non-dual encompasses duality. It's part of the non-dual in that it gives us this inspiration and this joy and this beautiful, beautiful impetus to be that hidden treasure that longs to be known. So that's the perfection, and that's the purpose of it. We just need to keep our dual nature and our non-dual nature in proper perspective. And again, this is non-duality. And within there's this part of us that believes in duality, the part of us that needs for survival. But sometimes it ripples out and takes care of other things. It manages where it doesn't need to manage. For example, playing a wrong note in a concert, saying a wrong thing in a conversation, disappointing someone, failing at something, and making that be your entire life. That's where it gets us in trouble. That's where it messes with us. That's where we have to return back to the garden. Joni Mitchell, we have to get ourselves back to the garden, and that is the garden of wholeness and non-duality, and knowing that that truth is true and living like that truth is true. So, how do we do that? Seriously, how do we do that? Anybody? Okay. My theory is witnessing and befriending. I come back to that all the time. Witnessing and befriending. Witnessing that which we're doing in our minds. Witnessing my friend saying I played a wrong note, and witnessing that it's taking up way too much part of our consciousness, and me asking her the question, which again, I don't think I asked out loud, was, are you playing that wrong note now? You know? One of the smarter things I've done during this pandemic this has been a trip, you know. Somebody just reminded me the other day of this book that our beloved Reverend Karen gave to me. And it's a book called How to Lead. Now, this is not the real title, but I call it How to Lead When You Don't Know What You're Doing. And I'm like, really, Karen? It's really like how to lead when you don't know where you're going. And it's a fantastic book. But, in the pandemic, there's been a lot of that, right? Not only people who live in churches, but families and schools and everything. All of that is going on. And there's been a lot of uncertainty. I think one of the smartest things I ever did was I shared this in class the other day. Forgive me for repeating it, but I was watching television. I was supposed to be watching something educational. I was supposed to be watching something on Gaia Network, which is all about spirituality. I was supposed to be eating healthy food, and I got off a really challenging Zoom call, and I got something trashy to eat, and then I got something trashy on the television, and I'm watching, and I clicked the remote, and I turned to my husband, and I said, I'm eating because I feel empty inside. And he just went, whatever. And then... And it was godly. It was godlike. And then I just went back to watching. And it was it was perfect because it was just witnessing. It was just witnessing the state of mind that I was currently in at the time. The other day I was in a meeting with a bunch of ministers, and one of us, it might have even been me, said, I feel like a failure, right? And we were like, oh, you feel like a failure? Oh my God, I feel like a failure too. And we all started just witnessing it. And then, you know, again, ask that question. Okay, are you playing the wrong note right now? Do you feel like a failure all of the time, or was it just in that moment? Are you empty inside, or is it just in that moment? Are you a disappointment all of the time, or is it just that one conversation that you've blown up in your head to something huge, and it doesn't need to be huge? It was just a passing moment in this beautiful ebb and flow that we call spirit, right? So it's witnessing that, and befriending it is just being with it and recognizing its place in the scheme of things, one event in a series of many, many events, noticing what we're doing to it with our minds, and then relaxing that and saying, oh, look at you, aren't you cute, you little binary operating system, you're just trying to survive, and you don't need to go through all of those shenanigans again. Really, there's a much bigger reality out here for us. You know, curiosity is really helpful. That question, do I feel like a failure now? Do I always feel like a failure? What percentage of time do I feel like a failure? Where's my pie graph, you know? That, and also, I had a counselor once, it was fairly recently, and I was talking about a lack of confidence about something, and completely unrelated, she said, what you need to do is to go through your life and start noticing everything that you're doing right. And when you do something right, you say, yay for me. So you empty the dishwasher. and you say, yay for me. I emptied the dishwasher. Yay for me. You fold the laundry. Yay for me. You clean out the lint trap. Oh, that is the, isn't that the best part of housekeeping ever? Don't you love to clean out the lint trap? You clean out the lint trap. Yay for me. You back down the driveway without backing into your neighbor's car. Yay for me. 3 times in my life, people, 3 times, and Hugh did it once too. So there you go. You don't want to move across the street from us, just saying, okay? So just like that, like it's just, it really is just a matter of keeping things in perspective and keeping things truthful. Because really, you know, I always go back to Emma Curtis Hopkins, who said, the truth cannot operate in a lie. If you're telling a lie that all of the notes that you've played in your life are bad, or that this one note has the power to ruin your life, or that this one disappointment has the power to devastate you, or that this one thing that you did that was a little off, a little inappropriate, that felt like a failure, if that's who you are, then that's just a lie, and the truth cannot operate in that. Again, it's what Cynthia Bourgeois said about how you can't be in the past, reliving the past or predicting the future and receive the gift of the present. So easy, right? They call it the present. You have to be present to get the present, right? What? Seriously, what could be easier? So easy to remember. You have to be present to get the present. And the presence too, by the way, which is the present. Okay, enough about that. Okay, so, you know, in closing, I just want to add one more piece of insight to this that just came to me today. So, my friend, this is probably, how old am I? Yeah, probably about 30, 35 years ago, she played a wrong note in a concert, and she told me about it. And now here I am, 30, 35 years later, telling you about it, having benefited from the expression of her wrong note. So is it possible that her wrong note was my right note, and that my right note is our right note? See, that's the thing. In a binary operating system, you're always saying right or wrong. But what if it's both? And what if there's no judgment attached to either one? And what if it's all part of the mystical, magical kingdom of heaven, which is the consciousness of the Christ, which is the consciousness of wholeness, which is the consciousness to which all of us are welcome citizens, welcome inhabitants. Welcome not only inhabitants, guests, but also welcome givers of the kingdom of heaven to all beings. We do that with our consciousness. We do that with our self-forgiveness. We do that with our truth-telling. We do that with being present. All of these things and so much more we shall do. Let's start now. Let us pray.